The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
And welcome to the podcast here, the day after Labor Day. Great to have Herb Street and Pollock here with us. And Herbie's had a weekend, like from no football to the turnaround with game day. And then, of course, BYU Navy on the call and then coming back this morning. First off, before we get into anything and everything over what we saw over the weekend, your reaction, Herbie, to actually being somewhere inside a stadium and calling a game without fans, regardless of the result and the final score, just give us an idea what that environment was like last night for you on the BYU Navy call with Reese Davis.
Well, I think first there's that obviously initial impression. You know, you've been thinking about it. Okay, there's not going to be any fans. Nobody was in there. Family, nobody was inside there. The brigade, obviously, there's nobody in the stands except for a handful of staff. And so at first, you know, when you're doing a game, you notice that. But once you put the headphones on, you start to, you know, get excited about the game, excited for the first couple series for the game. You're kind of locked in on the game. And I don't know about you guys, but I was kind of enjoying the gnat sounds of the players and the oohing and the aahing of the BYU players, and, you know, big play after big play or big block after big block by that offensive line. So I think it's just going to be a different. Obviously, we miss the crowds. We miss the energy of the bands and all that the college football has to offer. But, I started to kind of enjoy – fans anyway, having a chance to hear what David and I kind of grew up with and what we're very familiar with the amount of communication that's going on the field between players and then from the sidelines out to the field. And just the celebration of hearing the players. I started to lock in on that, but it's definitely an eerie feeling to walk in. The best way to describe it is if you've ever gone to a practice in a big NFL or college stadium, and it was closed to the public, and the coach let you come in to go to the practice, and you're just in there by yourself, or maybe a few other family members, and you're in this huge stadium, and it just feels different. It feels very, very. It's just obviously not the same. But I'm trying to turn it into a positive by focusing in on the benches and the communication.
Well, that's going to be the big challenge, I think, for every single program experiencing this, whether it's, 50% capacity we could see in games in Texas, or potentially, no fans at all. But when you look at the play, this is not a knock on Navy, because clearly these are unique circumstances. This feels like, though, guys, in many programs, it's going to be a theme, especially the first couple of games we're going to see, because of the lack of practice, the lack of ability to hit every day, having enough players available. Is that going to be a big concern for you guys the first couple of weeks as we see some of these scores, the North Texas game, 57-31, Army 42-0 against Middle Tennessee, the Marshall 59-0. What was your takeaway?
I want to ask Pollock as a defensive guy. Navy chose David out of what they called, Coach Ken was saying, out of the safety concerns for his players. They decided to hit bags and they didn't go live once. And it showed, I thought, in the way they played. And I thought, if you're concerned about the players and their safety and they're healthy, to me, follow the protocols that they're suggesting from your league and go out and hit. If they're letting you hit, then hit, because I think you're almost putting doing your players on the defensive side more of a disservice by putting them out there to play a game when they haven't hit until they go out there and here comes this BYU offensive line and these running backs running downhill at you. That's a little tougher. What would you do, David, as a player if they're not letting you hit much in practice?
Well, it showed.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely showed. And I heard y'all talk about it on the broadcast. It made a big difference. And listen, if they were allowing me to hit, I would hit. And I think it's important to practice tackling. And that's why we talk about the spring football aspect and element of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. That's why I'm kind of against it, because you can't play games and not tackle. And I think the defense naturally we have an advantage, by the way. The offense takes time to gel and it takes time. I was just blown away by some inability for defenses to tackle. And, you know, some people obviously got it a lot better than others, you know, but I thought the offenses would come out the gate struggling more than the defenses would because of lack of time to communicate. But now you see lack of tackling, and listen, this isn't just this week, Kurt. We've seen this epidemic the last several years because we don't practice tackling half as much, 75%, 100% almost as much as we used to. And teams go days and without tackling. And now you've just seen that it's a tough sport to practice if you're not going to execute tackling. And listen, you can do it on dummies and you can do it on tackling wheels they have. But it's not the same of getting a body to the ground that's actually going to fight, you know, and cut and then try to power through. And so I think you definitely saw some of the defenses struggle in that realm, and Army, I mean, or Navy was definitely one of those. That was the worst I think I've ever seen them look.
Yeah, especially offensively, you know, the lack of execution. And it was really because the battle at the line of scrimmage, it's hard to run the option when you're getting in the interior of your offensive lines, just getting blown up and thrown into the backfield. And they just couldn't do much of anything. I tell you, talking about Navy and all that, but man, I left there thinking, I know BYU is not going to get really challenged. They play Army in Houston is about all they have left, but really made me think I wish they would have played their regular schedule, because that is a veteran, physical, nasty BYU team. They've been through a lot of injuries over the last couple of years, and they've had to play a lot of people, and they've suffered in the last couple of years because of that. But now all those guys that they had to play, now they're all healthy. The guys that were hurt are healthy, and the guys that stepped in for them are all healthy. So now you got a really experienced veteran team that's been through a lot of adversity, and they look like they've been practicing for 6 months. I mean, they looked like a well-oiled machine.
Is it fair, Kirk, though, to ask the question? Because the doubt of
BYU. How much of them was that them, and how much was that Navy?
Yeah, I think that's fair too. But the same thing we've been asking about BYU, it's not been the line of scrimmage; it's been the passing game, right? And you know, losing your best playmaker before the season starts and breaking in wide receivers. And they looked fine, but I'm just saying, I still don't know if they can pass the football. I still don't know if that's something that they're gonna. That's gonna be interesting to me to watch with BYU before I think that they can run the table. Is the offense going to be complete, or is it going to be just ground and pound? Because just ground and pound, you're going to meet teams that can stop that.
Well, I think Zach Wilson, you know, in his third year now as a starting quarterback and healthy, you know, 2 years ago as a freshman, he was forced into play, became the youngest starting quarterback in the history of the BYU program, and hurt his shoulder, his throwing shoulder, and had shoulder surgery in the offseason, came in last year, was never really 100%. Like, he never quite recovered it. Then he ends up hurting his throwing hand, his thumb, or not. And so now you've got, comes back from that. So he's just been dinged up these first 2 years. And now he's healthy. I mean, you're right. I mean, they didn't get tested. We'll see. They've lost their top three receivers from last year. Then you throw in Bushman, the All-American.
Best playmaker. Yeah.
Led him in receiving the last 3 years. So but I thought the Romney kid, 18, looked pretty good to me on the outside. Milne, Dax Milne, 5, is kind of that precise route runner. Pau, the number 2, is 6'4", kind of a physical guy. I don't know. We'll see. The problem is Houston and Army, you know, I have a lot of respect for Army, but I don't know if they can stand up at the line of scrimmage. Those boys at BYU, behemoth. I mean, there's 2 or 3 of them are NFL offensive linemen. I mean, they're – And they're,
hey, Kevin,
they're grown men on that BYU offensive line.
Hey, Kevin, how about your boy having to come out the gates, by the way, with BYU and the all name team? Like, I was listening at home and I'm like, oh, yeah. Wow.
Bro.
Yeah, there's one after another. And you're like, golly.
Bro.
I was just loving it. Bro. I was loving it.
Bro, I was doing meditation. I was killing Reese. I must have called him 20 times. Can you say this one more time? Say this.
Yeah.
Bro, I was, and Reese and Fowler, and probably Kevin, you're like that too. Say it. I'm just like, okay, I got it.
Listen, it is a moment where your brain wants to pause, but at the same time, you do not want to pause in that sentence, right?
Yeah.
You want it to spin off of, like, Mia Matalolo, I remember doing something at Navy
Veterans Day. And I went over to Amatalolo literally for a good straight hour the morning of to make sure I nailed it and that it was a natural conversation.
Yeah.
I will never forget that. Right.
And I'm telling you, I think Fowler, when in doubt, when he does names, you know, he just goes faster, you know, and it's like, did he say that right? It sounded kind of right.
Back to BYU, you mentioned the original schedule. They were playing Michigan State, Arizona State, Missouri, Stanford, Boise State, and San Diego State. Like, that's impressive. And they do it every year. They're not afraid to play anybody. But to see Zach Wilson, going back to one more thing that Kirk, I think will be a huge theme, and Pollock and I talked about it sometime this summer, is if you're familiar with the offense and there's stability there, you have a leg up on everybody out the gate, no matter what. And I'm kind of curious to see how that will play out. Like, you know, we know the Clemsons of the world. We know, of course, that the teams that are having, you know, the Floridas of the world. We briefly talked about that, but like, how does that play at Miami, right? With Derek King, who has experience, but at the same time is in a completely different look with a different team and now real action. How do you think that's going to play out with guys that are transferring and now trying to get acclimated to an offense?
I think the best thing that the coaches can do, and they know this, it's just a matter of juggling the new protocols and the restrictions that they have placed on them with COVID. But any coach would tell you that they try to make practice harder for all players, but especially quarterbacks, then it'll be in a game. And so if you get a guy like Derek King, for example, you want to try to give him every look imaginable defensively, which Diaz is very capable of doing. And then you just want to try to confuse him and create stress for him and his new scheme. So by the time he goes out there on Thursday against UAB, he's seen everything that under the sun that he potentially could see with his new teammates and trying to build that timing and the continuity that we talked about earlier. And if you don't do that, then eventually they're going to get into a game and they're going to get exposed. So coaches in August, a normal August, right, David, they try to give them everything that they can think of in order to try to prevent, you know, deer in the headlights kind of look, because that's when you as an offense, you're going to get locked down and the quarterback's going to get exposed.
And I think it's important to have those experience because, listen, practice is awesome, but games are sped up always. And I think great teams are able to practice faster and great teams are able to try to make it a competition in practice and try to chart throws and, you know, go offense versus defense and try to make it realistic. You know what else is a big advantage, Kevin, is it's a huge advantage to practice against a great defense every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, these quarterbacks that have to go at some of the top defenses in the country every single day, and it makes you play fast and it makes your timing be good. It definitely helps. But I mean, that's why I think a team like Texas has a good chance with Sam Ellinger to come out the gates, good. I know Alabama has a young freshman that's going to be a freak show at QB, but Mac Jones has been there. He kind of knows the timing. He knows the system. Trevor Lawrence with Clemson, like all these teams that have that, I definitely think it helps because you've already got the built-in answers. You've already went through the tests and the fire. And, you know, Derek King doesn't necessarily have all of his answers yet. But the good thing about Derek King is he can improv with the best of them. So that's a great thing that he has a feather in his cap that many people can't do. But I definitely think it's a huge advantage, these guys having experience.
I would just add one last thing to that. In most schemes, maybe not BYU, you know, they're showing you that they're still about trying to pound the ball and go play action off of that. But most of these college offenses – The timing between the quarterback and the receiver is so important. And I think you really get a feel for which quarterback has the respect of his teammates that when he calls or puts on the board, hey, we're going to do 7-on-7 at 4:00, you know, make sure you're there. And is it all hands on deck? There's no coaches calling that. That's a quarterback and maybe, you know, a linebacker or a safety calling it from the defensive side. Is everybody showing up? Or some of the guys like, where's so-and-so, man? Where's he at? He said he'll come tomorrow. Like, is it like that? Or is everybody showing up, everybody accountable? Those are the teams that typically become really, really good as far as the execution and the passing game because they work, like David said, there's timing, there's execution. and there's preparation in order to achieve that. And Joe Burrow and his receivers are to the nth degree on the execution that they played with in 2019. But in talking to Joe before the Texas game and a lot of the games that I called for him, especially early in that Texas game, I talked to him about this new system everybody's talking about with Joe Brady. Okay, we're excited to see it, Joe. Why is it going to be different? We've watched LSU since 1920. I formation, run the ball. Now I'm supposed to believe you're going to open it up. What's going on here? Talk to me. He's like, dude, I'm telling you, it's going to be different this year. I've been working with my receivers literally like 5 hours a day for 3 months. The timing, I could throw every pass with my eyes closed. And I'm like, all right, pat him on the back. We'll see. And then the rest is history. You know, we watch what happened the entire 2019 year. But that's what every quarterback hopes to be able to achieve. And I think it's just been more challenging because of, again, everything that these teams and coaches and players have had to deal with COVID.
Let's stay on that theme here and combine this, because Pollock bringing up the Big 12. One topic of conversation on game day and fueled by Bears, Iowa State and Brock Purdy, as well as, you know, Spencer Rattler in Oklahoma. Rattler obviously has all the hype. We've seen how the Oklahoma quarterbacks have developed. He's had time there. He's taken some reps, but he hasn't been a starter. How do you view the idea of what Iowa State can bring to the table in Purdy, as well as on the other side, Spencer Rattler? There is a little bit of the unknown, guys, but he brings all the talent in the world to that position.
I would just say this, Spencer Rattler, I don't know a thing about. I don't really watch a ton of the recruiting stuff. And I happen to watch QB1, some of the episodes that he was on. And the one thing that I would encourage him to do is go back and think about Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts. And not only do they all have one thing in common, that they all played for Lincoln Riley, the thing that I think they all had in common was they all played for whatever reason. They all had a different journey to get to Lincoln Riley. They all played with a serious chip on their shoulder. They all played with something to prove. And Spencer Rattler is the first guy. Now think about all those guys transferred in to play for him. Spencer Rattler's come in, high profile, number one, whatever, five-star, all world. Is he going to learn the importance? And is Lincoln Riley going to be able to convey this to him about high school's over, you know, all the All-American awards, all the, you know, pull the hats out. Here's where I'm going to go. All that BS is over. And now it's about grinding and earning respect and winning your teammates over. The Jalen Hurts just left this locker room, dude. Like, he would play a game and then he'd go do squats after the game was over. And like, this is a different animal, a whole different level. It's not just, hey, I can slap around, I'm a great quarterback. It's a commitment. Don't you think, David, with Lincoln and with OU and what they've had these last 3 or 4 years, it's just crazy. You're gifted and you can throw the ball. I'm, that's what I'm most apprehensive and anxious to see OU's offense this year.
But and I agree. I agree there's some challenges there. But the only thing I'd go back to is I watched this offense 4 years ago or 3 years ago and 2 years ago and last year. And I just, there's a lot of offenses that we watch across college football and we go, where's the answers? Like LSU, finally, you watched them last year. They had the answers. Finally, if we get this, they know this. There's a lot of offenses across college football. If they get something, they don't know how to fix it and they don't have answers. Lincoln Riley has answers for everything. And I've also seen this system with him morph and change. It changed with Jalen Hurts last year tremendously. It was a totally different type of game plan. But again, numbers are still stupid through the roof. I trust Lincoln Riley and know that he's going to put his guys in position to succeed. Now, listen, that being said, CeeDee Lamb was the production of four guys on that roster. I mean, they got to find a guy. They've lost running backs now, whether it be Sermon who transferred out or Kennedy Brooks, who opted out. So they've lost guys that are big time, but Creed Humphrey's back in the middle at center is a big deal. The best center in the country. Offensive line will be really, really good. I just trust Lincoln Riley. That being said, Kirk, we've still seen Oklahoma the past 3 years. And what's the common theme? They're going to lose a game they're not supposed to. We saw it with Iowa State 2 years ago. We saw it with K-State last year. We saw it with Texas the year before that. Like, to me, the biggest concern with Oklahoma is, can they bring the consistency? Is their defense going to continue to improve and get better, even though they lost Murray and Gallimore and some of those guys that were studs? But I don't know, man. I've built up enough trust and credence in Lincoln Riley that I'm like, you know what? They're going to score 40 a game. Like, I'm just going to go ahead and put that on the ledger.
No, man, I think anybody who's followed college football has learned to respect Lincoln Riley. It almost, you know, the three of us could go out there and it feels like they're gonna put up points. Like, I get that. I just think that at that position, the intangibles of that position have been off the charts. I'm just saying that it's not just calling ball plays and slinging it. It's that position has provided a lot of leadership and a lot of difference making opportunities that affect not just the offense, but the entire defense and the entire belief that, hey man, we're going to find a way to win this game, you know, and Lincoln starts with him, and he's got the best line coach in the country. And, you know, you're right. There's a lot to always just kind of plug and play and expect from them. But I want to see if this Spencer Rattler, with all that hype, can play with a chip on his shoulder and earn his team's respect. With Brock Purdy and Iowa State, to me, that brand just continues to get stronger and stronger with Matt Campbell. You know, they lose some players, but they kind of just plug guys in with similar talent. That, to me, is as much about the system. And when you throw in a Brock Purdy, who can be a difference maker with his creativity, can run just enough, can make every throw, there's another quarterback that gets, you know, his team to believe that, hey man, every Saturday we take the field with that guy, I believe we got a chance we're going to win this game. And so, to me, with Iowa State, it's do they have enough horses where they have to execute perfectly every single week to beat teams that have equal or better talent than them? And sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. And that's, they're just so close to getting over the hump. We'll see if this is the year that they do it.
I don't think people realize how good Brock Purdy is. And it's been since he stepped on campus as a true freshman and started to play. You just, like, if you haven't seen him from Iowa State, he's very Favre-esque, and he's very, he's so creative. He can spin the football into tight windows like nobody's business, and he will, but he also can scramble and throw off different platforms, and he's just exciting to watch. And you know, last year they lost a ton of close games. I'm interested to see, they're retooling that whole offensive line. Last year they were retooling the skills, so I'm interested to see how they do up front. But if you haven't seen Brock Purdy, he's the reason why, you know, Iowa State's tough and they're blue collar and they play good defense, but he's the reason why their offense has a shot to really be good. And I think being the Big 12 conference, I think there's several teams in the Big 12 conversation this year. I think you got a four-team race with Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, and Texas. I think all four of those teams could beat each other and make this league, you know, very balanced and very diverse, you know, especially with those top four.
I know. Every year Texas has got a shot, and I'm with David. Normally you just err on the side of OU with Lincoln, just because we've been trained to think that way. But, you know, It wouldn't surprise me to see Texas be better this year. Get Chris Ash coming in as defensive coordinator. I think they'll be more sound on that side of the ball. There's no shortage of athletes on that side as well. And you know, Sam's back for another go around. And I don't know. I'm picking Texas this year out of the Big 12.
Pollock, you want to join in? Because I was about to set that up with Iowa State taking on Louisiana, Oklahoma taking on Missouri State, and then Texas taking on UTEP. We're talking about the top 25. Is Texas your team in the Big 12, considering you know Ellinger and that's what you trust? Who are you going with to win the conference?
Yeah, I will say this. If not now, then when for Texas? And I feel, Kirk, I feel like we have that conversation a good bit, by the way. But you got so many returning guys, you know, 15 plus returning starters, a 4-year starting quarterback. Tom Herman's been there. He's recruited at a better level than it had been in the past. Like, Texas better take this next step. I mean, last year you watched them and you're like, yeah, I mean, they kind of look good some days, kind of look bad some days. You know, they gave LSU everything they could handle early in the season, but you watch them against Iowa State and it's not the same team. So you know, Texas has to this is the year for Tom Herman. They got to step up, man. They've been recruiting too well, and they've got too many pieces back. I don't I don't believe in Texas yet. They're going to have to show me because I've done it so much the last several years where I look at them and I think they should be next on that list and they should be ready to take over. Oklahoma State, to me, the playmakers you're talking about with Sanders, with Wallace, with Chuba Hubbard, like you got three guys that could rival anybody in the country. But again, I'm going to go back to a common theme in the Big 12. Who has the offensive line? Who has the guys up front that can pave the way and make life easy? I think Oklahoma has that. Oklahoma has a bunch of recruiting and a bunch of playmaking. My default is still to go to Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma because they've done it so many years in a row. And I just trust the offense and I trust what they are. I'm not saying they're ever going to win a playoff game, but I trust them to continue to get there.
So that transitions here, and Oklahoma State's upcoming game this week has been postponed till next week. With, you know, it goes into this conversation too. We're starting to see teams say we can't play this week. We're going to have to switch it. We're going to have to move or postpone or play down the road. So we're going to have a choppy schedule all season, as expected. Transitioning now with the uniqueness of the ACC, where Notre Dame joins the conference this year on the schedule. Everybody comes in knowing what Clemson can do. Throwing Notre Dame into the mix here with Ian Book and how familiar he is and understanding everything in Brian Kelly's offense and the expectations. And then also the wild card here a year ago, the unknown entering the season in Chapel Hill with Mac Brown. But now we understand after a year the impact of Mac with recruiting as well as the team just understanding the win, and then you bring in a special talent in Sam Howell. How do you guys think the ACC will play out? Is this a Clemson with a wide gap, or is this potentially it's Clemson right afterwards, it's Notre Dame, and then a close third potentially is North Carolina? Herbie, let's start with you.
Clemson is definitely still, in my opinion, in a league of their own in that conference. You know, anytime you have Trevor Lawrence back for his third year, the receivers he has to work with, and arguably the best back and most explosive back in the country in ETN, who's even stronger, faster than he was last year. You got to like your chances. And I think Brent Venables was speaking about Lincoln Riley. Could almost say the same thing about Brent Venables and the defense that he seems to put out every single year. So I think they're a cut above. I would say that, you know, I know Notre Dame with Ian Book is easy to like. There's a lot to like on that roster. I might be crazy, but I think North Carolina is, you know, closing the gap there. And with the quarterback play that they have and the system that they have and almost this newfound belief, this like youthful energy and excitement that hasn't been in Chapel Hill since, I don't know, Mac left, maybe. I mean, Mac does a great job of getting kids and relating to kids and getting them excited. And there's just, like I say, a youthful energy about that squad led by Sam Howell. And I think that they're right there and maybe a notch ahead of Notre Dame in the ACC for me. But the one thing, and then David, I'll let you go. I think this conference just feels a little bit deeper when you throw Pitt in there and Pat Narduzzi. They're going to play with a chip on their shoulder. I think they're a little bit better. You know, Louisville, you got Miami now with De'Ara King. I love Mike Norvell's system. I don't know if they're going to make a huge jump, but I just love what he did at Memphis. And now he's at Florida State with a lot of playmaking ability. I mean, you go around this whole conference, and I just feel like probably the top to bottom, the best quarterback play in the country as far as a conference is concerned. So I don't know. It feels a little different this year in the ACC.
And I think it's going to be interesting to watch the Big 12 versus the ACC because we talked about Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Iowa State. I think you've got kind of a similar situation with the ACC. You kind of got a Big Four. And I think Notre Dame, when you look at Notre Dame, the reason I think Notre Dame is going to be comparable is we've got the quarterback solidified. All of Notre Dame's offensive line is back. By the way, that's always one of their best strengths. Yeah. I mean, it's always up front where they're really,
they got
really good.
Guys up there. Yeah.
Always. And so you got a quarterback with experience that can sling it. That also has, by the way, playmaking ability and wiggle and can bail you out of certain situations. I think defensively, when you turn on Notre Dame's tape and you start watching guys, there's plenty to like. You wonder about corner for them, but I think Notre Dame's going to be really good. But when you look at North Carolina as well, I think you've got in place already, now that you got Sam Howell, you got a 1,000-yard rusher, you got 2 1,000-yard receivers with Brown and Newsome. Like, you've got playmakers that can scare Clemson. That can, and the one thing that when you watched North Carolina versus Clemson a year ago, they weren't scared.
No.
There's a lot of people that
energy
go into that matchup.
About.
Yeah. Yeah, that energy you talk about with Mac. Mac makes you believe. We worked with him at ESPN. He's just got a jovial Santa Claus type feel to him, man. He's just he makes you happy. He makes you believe.
Makes you feel good about yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could tell Notre Dame or North Carolina had that. I think Louisville is going to be awesome to watch. I think they're going to be so much fun with playmakers like Atwell. That's a freak show that can make plays all over the field. You saw McHale last year, a quarterback, come in and start dealing and start playing really, really well. So I think he got four teams. And then I think the wild card with Miami of whatever they are. Here's the thing I love about Miami. At least they're going to now be a wide open spread. Like, we can throw rocks in Miami and hit receivers that can run 4-4. So, like, let's play to that at some point. And I think they're going to, and I think it's going to be, you know, exciting with guys that can speak with speed and Derek King that's with speed. But I think on the whole, there's several teams that could challenge, that could be fun, that could be more competitive games and make a more competitive league this year.
Think about this. It's the first time, and you know, you can go back and look. I mean, Brock Berlin played there. I think it's the first time they've had a competent quarterback since Ken Dorsey, who wasn't like a flamboyant playmaker like a Derek King. He was just very capable within that offensive structure. He distributed the ball very well and had, by the way, first rounders all around him, and, you know, tight end, receiver, and running back. There was a whole different galaxy that Miami was in back in 01, 02, 03. But I'm just saying, at that position, they've been so erratic, almost 20 years of just not having a guy that they can hang their hat on and say, you know, we feel really, really good about this position. And we'll see if he ends up living up to what we all think he's capable of doing. Plus, he's got a new play caller and Rhett Lashley. So I think, you know, like David said, they're going to find an identity, and I think it's going to pay off for them offensively.
Guys, you know what's really weird too? You know, in a year of 2020 where chaos is everywhere, we won't have the Coastal Division chaos.
No.
And then talking about the ACC, I would say we went at least 5+ minutes. Not once did we mention Florida State. And clearly they're in a transition. What do you anticipate with Florida State with Mike Norvell? And I'm not asking for a prediction, because it's hard to predict considering what's going on right now. But what do you anticipate to see with the guy that Mike Norvell is as a coach at Memphis, and what he can bring to this program to try to turn things around, like we saw how Mac turned things around in North Carolina, and how we saw, you know, what happened with Louisville? What do you expect to see here at Florida State in year one?
Kirk, I'm going to pass this to you, but first of all, he wasn't listening, because you did mention Mike Norvell in Florida State.
Well,
go ahead.
But I'm saying it in the sense of breaking down Florida State.
Well, go ahead. I'll say this, man, because I've done a ton of Florida State games since Jameis was there and beyond. And I think that they had a culture problem when Jimbo was there. And I think it became more about me and less about we. I think it was all about getting to the league. And I think the first time they would lose a game, they lost the team, because he could get them to buy into, hey, we're going to go to the national championship. And then as soon as they would lose a game, that would go off the rails. And now they're more focused on themselves and their individual status. And I think that started to happen when Jimbo was there. And then I think that's Willie inherited. And I think Willie tried to change that. And I remember calling a game, Virginia Tech open. It was a Labor Day night game, Virginia Tech, Florida State, a couple years ago. And I remember talking to the players about that. And Brian Burns was in the room, and who's in the NFL now. And he said, man, we had an issue with guys that were more focused on their individual careers. And we've gotten that all out of here. And we're focused on the team now. And that was the first game before Willie Taggart had coached a game. And then I kind of saw a lot of the same characteristics and personality. So that's almost like a cancer that's come into Tallahassee. And so Mike Norvell, beyond just trying to call the right play and trying to pick the right quarterback and James Blackman and trying to, you know, score, he's trying to steer a Titanic and get Florida State to buy in to his system of, hey, we got to win games. And when we win games, guys, the NFL scouts are going to come. You know, all that stuff individually is going to work itself out. But if we're 5-7, nobody's really going to care unless you're just an individual freaky talent. So I think it remains to be seen if he can do that. But I like him on a personal level. I like what he did at Memphis. I like his energy and how he coached. He ran into a little bit of a dead end there when he said that he, you know, during this COVID and everything was going on with, you know, the social unrest. He said that, you know, hey, I've talked with my team, and Marvin Wilson came out and said, whoa, you didn't talk to us, you know, or whatever that was, where maybe he sent a text, and Marvin Wilson came out publicly and questioned him. I think they patched that up, but he's got to try to get the reins of this program and get it to me. That's, if they can do that, forget win totals, David, if they can just get back to loving each other and caring about each other and caring about the Florida State tradition and the pride and going back to Charlie Ward and Warwick Dunn and just all these great teams, Derek Brooks, they've had so many awesome players over the years. If they can get back to loving that and not themselves, then I think that would be a win to me for 2020 for Florida State.
Yeah, I think when I think about Florida State, it's the same. We've had the same questions for the past several years, and it's quarterback's been one of those issues. But my God, every time we look up, the quarterback's getting killed. And I think an offensive identity, an offensive pulse, an offensive, you know, listen, they still got freaks running around. And you mentioned Austin. He's going to be the best defensive tackle in college football. Who's the defensive end you mentioned that we all got to look out for? Can you pronounce that name for me real quick? You got that off. Because I can't pronounce it. So I caught you off guard. But you 13, pronounced it the other day on 13. Game day. You pronounced it the other day.
I nailed it. Sports Center. Nailed it.
Well, I shouldn't have put you on the spot. But, I mean, listen, they've got dudes. And they got guys in the trenches defensively, and they've seen that time after time. I think defensively, I don't worry about it. I still wonder. The thing I loved.
Josh Paindo. Josh Paindo.
Paindo. There you go. Paindo, big 6'7" sucker coming off the defensive end. He's going to be a freak, number 13.
There you go.
They got guys like him, and you got tackles like Austin. Like they've got guys on that side of the football. I think the biggest thing that's intriguing about Norvell's been doing this at a high level of calling plays for a long, long time. I expect that side of the football to come back and to have a pulse, and Blackman to be better and more consistent. I expect them to be able to run the football and throw, to mix in the RPO game, the more new school football. And that's why I expect Florida State to have a much better year than you've seen in the past, just because I think defensively we've always trusted them a little bit. Not great over the last couple of years. But I think when the offense gets better and doesn't have as many turnovers and sacks and negative plays, that I think you'll start to see this team get back to a bowl and be more successful this season.
I like Josh Kando. And next time, Pollock needs to make that announcement, and he needs to figure that out. Okay, Herbie? He needs to make the pronunciation. You've done enough after the BYU game last night.
Yeah, that's true. After the BYU game, I guess I should have gave him a break. The brain was overloaded.
Exactly. By the way, that category was give me a name we don't know, but by October, middle of the season, he'll become a household name. So I hit Mike Norvell up, and I'm like, hey, man, you got a couple guys that are lighting up in camp that I could put in this category. I'm trying to give your team some love. And he hits me with Josh Kando, and he spells his name the way it's spelled. And I was like, oh, thanks. And I looked at the name, and I'm like, How do you say that name? You know, and he goes, by the way, unblockable in camp. Like,
wow.
I don't know if that's, again, he's great, or Florida State's lines continuing with their tradition, not being able to block, but he said he's unblockable in camp. So yeah.
It's weird, Kevin. I didn't have anybody to text for that conversation. My bad. I looked in my Rolodex and I saw my wife. I didn't see anybody.
Dude, you and Dad had like, oh man, who would you guys have? Like,
Spencer Rattler. I thought he was brilliant. And then Jimmy G shows up on set, and we both have the same name. I'm like, we can't have the same name.
I thought Dez changed his name to someone else too. But it was
Sam Howell got mentioned, and you were living. Yeah, you were Sam. Like, what?
Sam Howell. I was like, I'm dropping a Josh Kando, and you're going Sam Howell?
I think I ended up going Hendon Hooker from Von
Yeah,
Tech.
You did.
Yeah, yeah. I think QB play again in the ACC, like we talked about. I think he's another name that'll be really good.
Yeah. Yep.
You mentioned Jimmy G. Guerrero is the producer on College Game Day, and you guys have he's one of the good guys. You guys go way back with him as he has produced the show and 25 years in the business, Herbie. You guys watching Game Day, first off, from your homes, Corso set an A+ for the creativity to make sure you guys were around him. That was fantastic. The topic that, Herbie, that I really want to talk to before we wrap this up is what you went through, because again, 25 years in the business, and you know, Saturday was like none other, as we experienced a 2020 like none other. What went through your mind, you know, during that 9-minute segment where you're talking about just, hey, let's just wake up, let's figure this out, because how can you not listen to the other side? I want to just get your perspective on what you experienced before that, because you're not one of those type of people that's going to rehearse anything. You listen. What was the experience like? What was the reaction afterwards? Just take us through the thought process, because the passionate plea, it meant a lot to a lot of people around the country.
I just tell you, it was not, and you and David know me pretty well, that was not like a planned comment. I actually thought, really, David and I had a Zoom game day meeting like we would normally do on Friday, and that subject came up, and that segment came up, and I don't know, man. As a white male in America, the last 3 or 4 months, I've just been quiet. I've just been listening, and I didn't really feel it's my place to talk. I've just been listening, and so that's what I did during that Zoom call. I just kind of, and David, I think, kind of felt the same way. We just kind of sat and listened, and I intentionally did not watch the feature. They sent it to our emails. I didn't watch it because I like to watch the features. I love our features on game day. I think they're like one of the highlights of the show, and I love watching them and reacting very naturally to them. And so I thought very, very hard on this segment. I talked with Derek Mason for a long time, the head coach at Vandy. I talked to David Shaw, the head coach at Stanford. And that's where I got that quote, you know, that I'd heard in the past, but I thought it was very timely having that quote from Benjamin Franklin. And so I had that quote. I knew that I was going to go there, but I took a walk that morning with my wife and our dogs. And I was wrestling and struggling because I thought I'm just going to go the safe route. It's not my place to really say anything. And then I was like, but man, I really want to say this. And I want to say what I feel, but I don't, maybe it's not right. So I just back and forth. So I literally, when that segment started, my heart was pounding in my chest. I had no idea what I was going to say. And I listened very intently to the players and Maria and then Desmond and then David and then coach. And then I started to talk and I had no idea what I was going to say, except I knew I had that quote in my hand. And I just started to say that quote. And then a voice kind of in my head was just like, you know, go, like, let it, just say what you think. Stay. Mm-hmm. And that's all I did. I just said what was on my heart. And I don't know why I got emotional. I guess it just because I feel so bad for all these stories. Like, all of us have heard these stories from our colleagues. You know, mm-hmm. David used to play for the Bengals and had teammates there. And before that, of course, Georgia, you know, I played at Ohio State, and we all, you know, those were our teammates. And we were in those locker rooms with those were our guys. And if anybody crossed one of our guys, you know, we didn't like that. We would take exception to that. And now I basically, my teammates are ESPN, and we were on a call 2 or 3 months ago, and mm-hmm. we heard a lot of stories, you know, from different people, Andre Ware and Rod Gilmore and Maria was on that call. And there are a lot of folks who shared stories that, you know, when you hear your colleagues share stories and Mark Jones and they're in tears sharing those stories, you're just like, man, it just gave me a different lens because I was never raised to think that way, that I've just always treated people. I'm a Christian guy. I've just tried to treat people the way I would want to be treated and treat people with love and compassion. And when they're not treated that way, it's just mind blowing to me. So anyway, a lot of that was just on my heart. And so I just was, I don't, to this day, I haven't gone back and watched. I don't even really know what I said. I just know I spoke from my heart and just said what I was thinking. And that was it, really.
Well, it was transcendent, and it meant a lot to a lot of people. And, you know, Maria, I think Maria, if you ever watch the video, Maria's moved by it emotionally. And she's talked to us specifically about it, outgoing of being a Black woman and what those experiences are like. And she feels it and experiences that through social media, speaking yeah. out on anything or just doing her job, the ugliness of social media. The quote is, "Justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are." And it is a fantastic quote from Ben Franklin. And I'm glad that David Shaw brought that up to you, because it's relevant 300 years later. It's applicable in this situation and what we're going through as we try to figure things out. And the one thing I admire, too, about what you experienced and what you went through is it came from the heart. And that in a world, I'm not saying that you would do this, but I'm saying just in a world where people are looking for affirmation all the time through their tweets and through anything they do, you didn't check social media. Like, you don't need to check social media. You knew that whatever you did came from the heart. And I do certainly appreciate that you spoke from that heart, from those opinions and from listening to everybody.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I don't have an agenda.
No.
Of any kind. I'm not into politics. I don't side with one side or the other. But I do believe in equality and treating people the right way, the way you want to be treated, the way you want your kids to be treated. That's the way people should be treated, that act accordingly. And I don't know, man, I think that this country is hurting. I think we've never been more divided than we are right now, the country. And if the things I said on Saturday can resonate a little bit with some people, that's great. And other than that, you know, we, David and I and you and others, try to carry ourselves in a way that hopefully is a good example of being inclusive and treating people with love and compassion. And we'll continue to do that.
I appreciate those comments. Again, unique situation on College Game Day this past Saturday. You guys are going on the road this coming week?
We are. We're going to
That's
Wake.
That's great. That's yeah. great.
Back Kirk's never been there, by the way.
Winston-Salem. Nice.
Have you, David?
Well, no, I've never been there either, but you've been on the show for 300 years, so I haven't been there as long.
So. No, the show's never been there. We'll have to get Bear to get the list out of schools that we've never been to, but I know Wake's definitely on it.
Yeah, you know, I think that list was down to like maybe 7. A dozen schools or less than a dozen?
No, I think it's down. I think it's down to 7.
7 schools. All right.
Well, yeah, because remember we hit Iowa State last year.
Yes.
And that was on the list.
A couple years ago.
We hit Washington State, a couple years ago. But it definitely, the list has dwindled. And this is a cool year. I hope we knock a few more off. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Last thing, I don't know about you guys, but I know things that with this virus can change. But I like the momentum and kind of where things are right now. I mean, I things can change tomorrow. I mean, they can change when we hang up this podcast. But, you know, high school football has been playing for 3 or 4 weeks, and you haven't heard any crazy stories about football causing big outbreaks around the country. College football has now been played for a few weeks. You haven't heard any huge stories about significant outbreak of the virus just because of that game. I know that on some campuses like Tennessee and other places, there's always the potential for an outbreak. But playing the game, we've not really had anything. So I'm kind of liking the momentum we got right now for the sport.
I'm with you. I'm cautiously optimistic, right? I think that's going to be the theme every single week. I'm cautiously optimistic. And watching games this weekend, it was like, yes, we've got games. They're not pretty. None of this is pretty, but at least we've got games and we're moving a step forward to the next week. And this step, I wake up every day cautiously.
What do you mean it wasn't pretty? It was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous to see. Even Kirk calling a 55-3 game, was it? I mean, it was ugly.
If you're a Navy fan, beautiful. There's nothing pretty about that, buddy.
It was beautiful to have college football. You know, listen, and Kirk talked about there's so much division. Like, if this does bring us closer together and together more often, like, and more positive and more things positive to do and say, like, that's awesome. And I think there's a lot of people that need some normalcy for their mental health purposes. And so I hope that we get to provide some of that. And I hope college football brings that back and it brings back good memories. And I hope it brings us more together than all the division we have in this country.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah.
We certainly need it. And that's, I think, the beauty of sport. So, guys, it was fun, and I look forward to game day on the road this weekend, and that Wake Forest-Clemson game will be on ABC. We'll be back in studio as well. I cannot wait for that, and be well, guys. Stay safe.
All right. See you, guys.
See you, dudes.
Cautiously optimistic. I will keep on saying that every single time we have the podcast, is every single day I wake up here. And it's good to talk a little bit of football on the field, as well as get a quick preview of the Big 12 and the ACC as they begin their schedules here later on this week. Big thanks to Herb Street for joining us with that quick turnaround, as well as sharing his thoughts, his powerful and heartfelt thoughts from College Game Day this past Saturday about the state of the country and where we are right now mentally and emotionally. And Pollock, of course, being Pollock, and he'll join us later on as he usually does as we go back to our regular scheduled two pods a week during the college football season. Another great show from Taylor Schwenk on the other side, our producer, who makes sure our schedule's always tight and running, and he does a great job making sure our guests join us here on the podcast for you as the listener. And I will say this again and again, cautiously optimistic. If you want football, wear a mask, stay safe, and stay healthy. Thank you. We'll talk to you later this week.